From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, whatever the case may be in your time zone, each and every one of them around the world covered by this program, the very largest program of its kind in the world, Coast to Coast AM. It is my honor and privilege to be now escorting you through the second half of the weekend, right on into the week, really. And I guess it's been another sad day in the world. We'll cover that in a moment. It's never good news. One of these days, before I ever do finally retire, I would love to come on and read nothing but good news. It will not be this night. Bombs kill 8 American soldiers in Iraq. Roadside bombs killed 8 American soldiers in separate attacks Sunday. It's really getting bad there. A car bomb claimed more than 30 lives in a wholesale food market in a part of the Iraqi capital where sectarian tensions are nothing but on the rise. In all, 95 Iraqis were either killed or found dead nationwide on Sunday alone. They included 12 police, among them the city's police chief in Samarra, who died when Sunni insurgents launched a suicide car bombing and other attacks on police headquarters. So, no good news from Iraq. The wreckage of a Kenya Airways jetliner, told you about it yesterday, crash found late Sunday in a dense mangrove forest outside Cameroon's commercial capital. Dozens of rescue workers and journalists walking through the swamp at night did reach the edge of the crash site, but didn't find any survivors, nor did they find the main part of the plane. They'll go back and look for that tomorrow. It kind of closed down at dark. Rescue workers on Sunday searched for anybody still buried in the heaps of splintered wreckage left in Greensburg, Kansas, after a massive tornado obliterated, literally, most of this south central Kansas town. Now, there are making the rounds on the internet pictures of Greensburg, Kansas, or what's left of it, not much. Waves of thunderstorms ripped across the Plain States on Sunday, drenching rubble that the Friday tornadoes scattered across Greensburg, and in addition, threatening more tornadoes tonight elsewhere. The pictures on the internet are just awful. I don't know what scale that tornado was, but it just literally obliterated that town. I don't think it was an F5. So you can imagine what an F5 would do. In France, they've got a new president, and things are going to change. Nicolas Sarkozy, a blunt, uncompromising, pro-American conservative, was elected president of France Sunday with a mandate to chart a new course for an economically sluggish nation, struggling to incorporate immigrants and their children. Sarkozy defeated Socialist Royale by, 53.06% to 46.94. They had an 84% turnout in France, according to final results released early Monday. Boy, that's big. It was a decisive victory for Sarkozy's vision of freer markets, toughness on crime and immigration, over Royale's rather gentler plan for preserving cherished welfare protections, almost said warfare, including a 35-hour work week that Sarkozy is calling absurd. 35 hours. Police Chief William Bratton in Los Angeles said Sunday that up to 60 members of an elite squad that swarmed into a park and fired rubber bullets during a May Day immigration rally are now no longer on the street. Bratton said he spent the weekend viewing video of the MacArthur Park incident, and he said LAPD failures were widespread, with officers from the top on down culpable. In a few moments, we're going to go to unscreened, open line phone calls. Anything you want to talk about is fair game. By the way, next hour, I'm really, really looking forward to this. Dr. Daniel H. Wilson will be here talking about artificial intelligence and robotics, and his belief, apparently, that robots will rise up and kill us all. That's right. Terminator type robotics. Anyway, if you'd like to call in and make a comment, here are the numbers quickly. West of the Rockies, toll free 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First time callers, area code 818-501-4721. Wildcard line, folks, area code 818-501-4109. We've got a lot of those, so a good chance to get in, area code 818-501-4109. And finally, if you're outside the country altogether, we've got a toll-free line for you. Get hold of your international operator and tell her you wish to call, 800-893-0903. In a moment, some of the rest of the news. By the way, last night's program with the brother I thought was extremely educational. I think I said it toward the end of the program, many people will take it in many different ways, and it could indeed be taken many different ways. If I suppose is a lesson in fundamentalist Catholicism, I guess you could take it as an insult to the current state of the Catholic Church. You could take it as underlining many things I've said about fundamentalism, no matter where you find it. You could take that show and its contents many, many, many different ways, but it was extremely educational. Okay, scientists in the U.S. say that initial data from a new way of scanning Mars has now shown up to half of the red planet's surface may contain ice. The new method of scanning for water offers vastly more accurate readings than anything previous. The data could prove vital for the Phoenix Mars mission, which launches this August and which will put a lander on the surface, and it will dig for ice. The new data shows wide variation as to how deep below the surface the ice is. The deposits far beyond the ice that is known to exist in the planet's North Pole could be so large that were they to melt, they'd literally deluge the planet in water, forming an ocean that would cover the whole planet. That's a lot of water. Big Brother is getting closer every day. In Britain, the British government is taking Big Brother pretty literally by adding lip reading technology to some of the 4 million or so surveillance cameras now already in place in order to identify terrorists and criminals by watching what everybody says. Electronic Design is reporting the Home Office is interested in a project being pursued by a senior lecturer in computer vision at the University of East Anglia in Norwich, England. Computer-based lip-reading technology would help video surveillance systems spot people planning a crime or a terrorist attack by literally watching suspects' lips move for clues. They did that several years ago, began it actually at a Super Bowl game that I went to, so now it'll move from facial identification to what's the guy saying? Boy, I'll tell you. Consider someone who's just died of a heart attack. His organs are intact. He hasn't lost blood. All that's happened is his heart has stopped beating. That's actually quite a bit the definition of clinical death, actually. And his brain has shut down to conserve oxygen. But what actually has happened? Has he really died? As recently as 1993, when Dr. Sherwin Nuland wrote the bestseller How We Die, the conventional answer was that his cells had died. The patient couldn't be revived because the tissues of his brain and heart had suffered irreversible damage from lack of oxygen. This process was understood to begin just 4 or 5 minutes after the heart stops. If the patient doesn't receive cardiopulmonary resuscitation within that time, and if his heart can't be restarted soon thereafter, he's unlikely to recover. The dogma went unquestioned until researchers actually looked at oxygen-starved heart cells under a microscope. What they saw amazed them. According to Dr. Lance Becker, an authority on emergency medicine at the University of Pennsylvania, after about an hour, we couldn't see evidence the cells had yet died. We thought we'd done something wrong. In fact, cells cut off from their blood supply died only hours later. But if the cells are still alive, why can't doctors revive someone who's been dead for an hour? Because once the cells have been without oxygen for more than 5 minutes, they die when their oxygen supply is resumed. It was that astounding discovery, Becker says. It led him to his post as the director of Penn Center for Resuscitation Science, a newly created research institute operating on one of medicine's newest frontiers, treating the dead. Biologists are still grappling with the implications of this new view of cell death, not passive extinguishment like a candle flickering out when you cover it with a glass, but rather an active biochemical event triggered by reperfusion, the resumption of oxygen supply. The research takes them deep into the machinery of the cell, to the tiny membrane-enclosed structures known as mitochondria, where cellular fuel is oxidized to provide energy. Mitochondrial control, the process known as apoptosis, I guess it is, the programmed death of abnormal cells that is the body's primary defense against cancer. It looks to us, said Becker, as if the cellular surveillance mechanism cannot tell the difference between a cancer cell and a cell being reperfused with oxygen. Something throws a switch that makes the cell die. With this realization came another, that standard emergency room procedure has it exactly wrong, backwards. When someone collapses on the street of cardiac arrest, if he's lucky, he'll receive immediate CPR, maintaining circulation until he can be revived in the hospital. But the rest will have gone 10 to 15 minutes or more without a heartbeat by the time they reach the emergency department. Then what happens? We give them oxygen, says Becker. We jolt the heart with paddles. We pump in epinephrine to force it to beat so it's taking up more oxygen. Blood-starved heart muscles suddenly forced and flooded with oxygen, precisely the situation that leads to cell death. Instead, Becker says, we should aim to reduce oxygen uptake, slow metabolism, and adjust the blood chemistry for gradual and safe reperfusion. In other words, we're doing it exactly backwards. Speaking of hearts, here's a man in Montreal with no heartbeat, yet he lives. He is a 65-year-old Quebec man who received a new long-term mechanical heart last month, which is being described as, he's being described as the only living Canadian without a pulse. Dr. Renzo Cicier implanted the HeartMate 2 mechanical heart into Gerald Langvin in a three-hour operation November 23rd. Officials at McGill University Health Center say the device, which is about the size of a flashlight battery, might last up to 10 years. Now, that's quite a few more years than conventionally you get. What they currently have lasts 2 or 3 years. So he has no detectable blood pressure whatsoever and no heartbeat, and yet he lives. Cost about $100,000. They paid for it. Good news for those of us who were, and I certainly was, very dismayed at the cancellation of Dead Like Me. I thought that was a great show. The dark comedy about the trials and tribulations of a group of grim reapers going to come back to life, at least briefly. Dead Like Me, the popular Showtime TV series starring Mandy Patinkin and Ellen Muff, I interviewed Ellen Muff, is returning as a made-for-DVD movie. MGM told MovieHole.com that Stephen Herrick, the Mighty Ducks, will direct the new film. No word yet who's going to be starring in the film, but I hope they keep the original cast. All right, there you have it. All the rest of the news. Let's now move to one of the wildcard lines and say, good morning, you're on the air.
Morning, Art.
Yes, sir. Good morning. Where are you?
I'm in Oceanside, California.
Oh, beautiful town. Welcome.
Yeah, sure is. Well, we call it ocean bottom here, but that's... anyway, don't be depressed about the world situation, Art. I mean, you know, there's no reason to be. Eventually, we'll just Gaia off this planet and everything will be cool. Once we're gone, we won't be here to recognize it or appreciate it. But...
No, I know all that's true, of course. But still, one day I would like to come in here and be able to read you all nothing but good news.
I understand that, but on the other hand, you know, there is one good thing to look forward to. We'll all make really good pets. Good night, Art.
Good night, sir. Have a great night indeed. And moving on to another wild card line, you are on the air.
Hi, this is Oscar. Hey.
Well, actually, saying you're on the air is perhaps a bit premature. You have a cell phone connection that is less than usable. Gone, huh? Well, that's life in the new cell phone universe. As you know, cell phones, well, why even start? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Stephen calling you from Mill Valley, California.
Hey there, Stephen.
Hey, Robin Falkov's wonderful effort is apparently having tremendous impact. The vote in the Senate has been delayed twice now. Apparently, as I scan through all the news, this is because of the massive response. They're trying to recapitulate toward it. So what I'm going to be doing tomorrow, bright and early, is calling both my two U.S. senators and my congressperson again and going again through the detail. I'm going to call their Washington office. Apparently, that's about the most effective thing we can do. I've heard the second thing is a fax, and the third, of course, is an email, which they just throw away. And because faxes are received electronically, probably about the same thing, too. So call folks if you can. And if you want the full detail on this, either go to Richard Hoagland's site or just Google Dr. Robin Falkov. That's 1B, R-O-B-I-N-F-A-L-K-O-V.
All right, and we're urging them, we're urging them to do what?
To not pass the Senate bill they're attempting to put through. For the exact number on the bill, I believe it's 1082, but I don't have that paper right in front of me.
Okay,
just Google up the site or Robin Falkov and you get the
The Senate bill, which would do what?
This would cause dietary supplements to be... This is another...
That one. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Still got the GL?
I have a little Chevy now, which is just like the GL.
All right. I've still got my Festiva, and we're cruising along here in Mill Valley.
And I use it 90% of the time. It's a wonderful little car. My wife has a driver's permit. She's about to take her test, and we use that car for just about everything. Tomorrow we will use it to go to Las Vegas for another visit, which now will be on a weekly basis until Asia Rainbell joins us June 1st. What a day that's going to be. First time caller line, you are on the air. Hello.
Excuse me. Hello, Art. Good evening. Just calling about the storm in Kansas, the tornado.
Yes.
It was classified as an F5.
It was
F5. 205 miles an hour.
Oh, my God.
It's terrible. I live in Colorado, and in the Denver area, and just can't imagine the devastation out there.
Well, the pictures, as I mentioned, are circulating on the Internet, and the devastation is just about complete. I saw one building standing among the rubble. It was just, it was awful. Absolutely. Yeah. It was just a wipeout.
Yeah, and we had a tornado here in Colorado in a small town called Holly just a few weeks ago. Same thing. Just terrible devastation with the storms that we're getting nowadays.
Unbelievable. I mean, they do occur elsewhere, but they're almost exclusively in North America. We've got that unusual combination of, you know, moisture and hot air from the south and Canadian air from the north. And so every spring, every fall, we get this weird, and I'm afraid we're going to get more and more of them, and more of them are going to be F5s than ever before.
It seems that way.
Yes.
Okay, Art, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for the call. Yeah, I looked carefully at those photographs, and really most of that town is reduced to matchstick size stuff. I mean, there were a few obviously bigger pieces, some parts of buildings, but these were brick buildings. These were wood frame buildings. These were not mobile homes. These were well-built homes, and they simply were wiped out, if you can imagine that. It's hard to even imagine they will rebuild that town. They might. But if you look at the photographs, it's hard to imagine they will. It'll be interesting to see. Americans are, I kind of thought they wouldn't rebuild New Orleans where New Orleans is, but they did. So we tend to bounce back, but boy, take a look at those photographs. If there was ever anything you might not bounce back from, that would be it. It was complete devastation. Awful stuff. All right, we'll break here and be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. A beautiful night in the desert. About 60 degrees out there, even at this time of night. It's just beautiful. Nice night to take a lot of calls, and that's what we're going to do in just a moment. We'll be right back. Well, all right, here we go. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Well, you're a dial tone, so you're not on the air. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
Hi. I'm calling. I'm concerned about the bees. It seems to be that our news media doesn't find it newsworthy, I guess. I've emailed a gentleman that I watch, Glenn Beck, constantly on the issue, hoping that he would pick up, but to no avail. And I'm wondering, by connecting the dots, I remember Einstein once said, if the bees go, so does civilization.
Within 4 years, humanity.
Yeah, and you know, something else I'm wondering, this is conspiracy theory, I know, but you know, I'm kind of thinking about the X-Files. I know I watched an episode dealing with the bees, and then I started thinking about all these microbiologists that have died, and it's funny how that's like amazing, and yet there's no accounting for all these scientists, that the microbiologists that have died, and I start looking at that, I start connecting the dots, and I start wondering, see, is this just all... I mean, I don't know. It's crazy.
Well, I'm not sure they're connectable dots, but certainly we have lost a disproportionate number of microbiologists, scientists. We have lost a lot of our bees, and in fact, what, 60% nationwide, I think 27, 28 states now, something like that. So mm-hmm. Something awful is going on, and it involves the environment. Now, I don't want to suggest, yes, I do. Look, the political conservatives in America are not really wild about environmental concerns. You know, I'll leave it for you to judge those who mention this disaster and those who don't, and what their motives might or might not be.
Well, Art, the one that I guess I was following this in the internet, Shaney is taking a look at this, and I don't place much faith in Shaney, and I don't know, it's scary, and I hope that they get a lock on this, because if they don't, we might just start facing getting used to eating, having bread and water. All our food crops, just about everything is affected.
Well, we've got climate change obviously going on. That's going to affect agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
The disappearance of the bees, should it become complete and permanent, we'll sort of finish it off anyway.
Well, Art, one other thing. What do you make of the microbiologists? I mean, that is just, it's mind-boggling. What do you make of that?
I have no comment because I have no proof that there's any specific agenda being executed. Yes, I did intend to use that word by anybody out there. I just don't have any proof, so I don't know any more than I know about the bees. But I know that our climate is changing, and if the bees on top of that disappear and we're unable to pollinate crops, we're in an awful lot of trouble. Try East of the Rockies again. You're on the air. Hi.
All right. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm calling from New Jersey.
Yes, sir.
I wonder if you're familiar with a project known as Operation Wetback.
Operation Wetback?
Yeah. Concerning immigration.
I would assume so. No, I'm not. But go ahead.
1955, 1956, I believe it was, President Eisenhower signed an executive order ordering the Justice Department, with cooperation of the Interior Department, to approximate or over 4 million, they assumed at that time, where in less than 15 months, over 2 million of them were deported. And the funny thing about it was that those who came from Mexico, they actually bused them back. Those from the Caribbean, they actually put them on ships, and South America put them on planes.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it was something that can be done if you apply yourself. Now, just one more thing about immigration. Are you familiar with something called ITIN, I-T-I-N?
No.
Individual Taxpayers Identification Numbers?
Well, I know what those are, yes.
Yeah, the IRS is giving those out to people who can't get Social Security numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It was something signed into law by President Mr. Clinton in 1996. A 10-year period from 96 to 2006, over 10 million of those identification numbers were given out.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately 8.2 million of them went to illegal immigrants. Now, Homeland Security is responsible at this time for finding, you know, doing their job, which they're not doing very good at, finding them and deporting them. The IRS refuses to give them the names of these individuals, claiming that it's against federal law,
mm-hmm.
which I think is the most absurd thing you can ever think about. Just one more last thing.
Well, all right.
One more last thing.
Well, no, before you get to one more last thing, if they're here and if they're earning money,
right,
then why shouldn't we get our tax money?
Okay.
I mean, if we don't give them numbers, then they don't pay tax at all, and that hurts us even more.
All right, let me tell you how much taxes were paid in that 10-year period into the Treasury. $59 billion from these individuals.
$59
billion?
Billion. Billion, that's a lot of
billion.
Money.
$24 billion was sent back in refunds, mailed to their houses, mailed to their wherever they were living.
Okay.
That leaves a net of $25 billion that was added into the Treasury in a 10-year period, which is approximately $2.5 billion on an average. Now, with income that comes into this country of, I think it was, what, $3 trillion a year, what is $2.5 billion? Is it worth it? When you consider,
I thought you said $25 billion.
$59 billion was brought in. $24 billion was paid back in refund checks.
Okay,
so you get an average of $25 billion.
Thank you.
Average that out 10 years, $2.5 billion.
Oh,
out of a treasury. Out of a treasury that takes in over $3 trillion a year.
Okay, but your argument still does not stand up. If they're here working, we might as well get the tax revenue, whatever it is, as opposed to not getting it at all. That's not to say that I support illegals being here, because I don't. Period. However, getting the tax revenue is of assistance to the country. These are separate issues. In my mind, they're separate issues. Might as well go ahead and get the money, from my point of view. Otherwise, that's more money that you and I may have to pay, right? Now, the argument between the federal agencies and the issues of privacy, I certainly cannot resolve that one. That'd be like tearing your IRS refund in half or something. I don't know why they remember tearing the baby in half. I can't make that kind of decision, but we might as well get the money. Now, as far as illegal aliens are concerned, we obviously have got to do something. We're being overrun, and I fully support whatever measures they'll take, whether that's building a fence, whether that's extra patrol people on the border, whatever it takes, we've got to stop the illegal immigration. We have a right to protect our country, enforce our borders, and we have more of a reason than ever to do so, because many coming across, or at least some, I guess, coming across, are not just coming here for better conditions, to send money home, to get a job. We can well imagine some coming across could have evil intent. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, good evening, Art. This is Mark in Florence, Oregon, and how are you doing tonight?
Just fine, Mark.
Yeah, Art, we'd spoken briefly last month about the aspect of the Luciferian doctrine is related to the globally elite wealthy of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably remember that conversation, I have a feeling. But
I do.
And to tonight I'd just like to take it one step further. And you had posed the argument basically that when the economy is going well, mm-hmm. that's when these people would prosper the most, owning the world's economy, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
The industrial and the manufacturing sectors.
In other words, why would those who are profiting from a cooking economy want to screw it up and ruin it?
Right.
Yeah.
And in a way, that question that you pose answers another more important question about what is really at the seat of power as far as the objective of those who actually have control of the world's economy, and many believe control of the world's political structure. And to give a short answer to it, it's basically to control men and eventually to control men's souls. When it actually gets into the area of being a trillionaire, Art, they've got many times more money than they could ever spend, but they continue to furiously amass it. And they do control the world and the people of the world en masse through their method of social engineering and what is referred to as the Hegelian dialectic, which is a philosophical way to implement changes into the world, which will bring about the kind of world that they want to have, which is really nothing that either you or me or any common person basically on the planet would want to see the world be that way.
What kind of world do you imagine that to be?
Well, Art, the way things are going and the way, there's so many areas that are deteriorating in the world at this point. But to look at what seems to me, and I believe you also, to be the most pressing issue upon us, which would be euphemistically, I think, called climate change. It's really global heating beyond global warming, basically. Mm-hmm. So little has been done to remediate this in any sector, whether or not it be chlorofluorocarbons, which I firmly believe that it's chlorofluorocarbons finally exhausted the transformative ozone gases, which gave us the cooler green and blue rays that we got in the summer and the springtime of the sun. Now we're getting ultraviolet year round, and that's what's melting the glaciers, and that's what's drying the woods out and causing all these forest fires around the world. They're paying absolutely no attention to it, but they do pay very close attention to managing the affairs.
That's really not true. We did cut down on CFCs. The ozone, to some degree,
yeah,
has repaired itself, so we did a little bit of good there anyway.
Well, I hope so. I truly hope so. In other areas of perpetuated wars and unnecessary wars and economic deprivation and starvation and famines, all of this, there's just been plenty down here as far as resources and technology goes that we shouldn't have these ills as a race.
Tell me something. How are these evil men controlling the world, controlling you?
Controlling me individually?
Yes.
Well, just simply by how much it hurts me, Art, in my heart, to see my fellow creatures suffer on a needless basis. And I could apply that to the Iraq War and both sides of that, the U.S. troops, as well as the almost million Iraqi civilians who have died there. And that war was gone into on a pack of lies, Art.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into an argument trying to defend the Iraq War with you. I was absolutely against it before it happened. And my position now is that we have to find a way to win and get the hell out. And I felt that way for some time with reference to Iraq. We're there. I wasn't happy about the fact that we went in. Now we've got to figure a way to win and to get out. We're probably not going to get out because one of the unstated goals was to put bases in Iraq, which we certainly have done, and I think we're going to stay there, and we're going to protect them, and we're going to have a presence right in the middle of the Middle East. And I'm not sure that's wrong. I think that to some degree, you could look at it this way. As bad as the news is daily from Iraq, with the number of Iraqis and Americans being killed, we are killing the enemy there. We are killing people who would kill us. Now, it really is an argument that can be made that better there than here. Right now, the enemy is throwing most of their assets, their human assets, into the war in Iraq. If we were not there, and if we were not in Afghanistan as well, I think they'd be here. That's just something to think about. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning. Going once.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air, sir.
Yes, I just wanted to discuss the Iraq War.
Okay.
Basically, you know, I know that we're in Iraq, you know, for security reasons, but it's hard for me to take that seriously since our borders here at home are pretty much completely open.
Well, that's a bit of a stretch. They're not completely open, but they're certainly very leaky.
Yes, sir. We have, you know, a pretty, it's not that hard, you know, from my understanding at least, for people, determined individuals at least, to come across our borders. And I just feel, you know, if one of these people wanted to harm us, it would probably not be that hard. And here we are in Iraq, you know, spending so much money every week to fight this war and to stabilize this country. And I feel like, you know, that amount of money we could be spending on perhaps, you know, nuclear bomb sniffers or
here's something to think about, sir. There are plenty of people, as you know, who want to harm us. As of yet, that has not occurred, save or since 9/11. So somebody's doing their job and doing a pretty good job, I must say, of it. We don't hear about the successes they have. So You might make the case that what we're doing in Iraq is concentrating our enemy's assets there instead of here.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I just really feel like our, you know, being a taxpayer, I just wish my money was being spent to militarize our borders or do something to really protect the bulk of Americans here, you know, on our homeland. And but you are correct. I'm sure that in some form, you know, the war in Iraq helps to avoid terroristic activities or for them to actually carry out the act. But from my understanding, most of the, you know, the best thing that we've done so far is domestic surveillance to stop terrorists who are here in our country who are
and we
to...
must be doing a pretty good job.
Yes sir, I agree.
All right, well, take care. If you do any travel around the world, there's terrorism, of course, is quite rampant in Europe, throughout much of the Far East, frankly the rest of the world. And we've done a pretty good job here. Now, you just don't hear about the successes. CIA, FBI, Homeland Security, they must be doing a fairly decent job, and I'd like to commend them because we generally don't hear about the successes, but you can argue that the lack of anything happening, even given the somewhat leaky, fairly leaky borders that we have, somebody's doing a pretty good job out there. Wildcard line, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. Going once.
I'm here.
Yes.
I wanted to let you know that there is going to be a report about the bees on, I believe, CBS on the news.
Yes, I had heard that. We discussed it last night. Somebody said CBS was going to do a story on it. Is that coming up tomorrow night?
Yes, tomorrow night, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I must have missed that portion of your program. However, I've been listening since I was like 11 years old, and I'm almost 21 now, so you definitely have done the right thing all this time.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yes, I've made it a point in my life to try and listen to the news so that way I know what's going on so things don't come and stab you in the back, you know? It's like, oh, where'd that come from?
How worried are you right now about the general state of things, the climate, the bees, all the rest of it? How worried are you?
I'm worried to the extent that I'm interested in finding out answers, but I believe that no matter what happens, we as humans will get through it. It doesn't matter if it's aliens, if it's, you know, global warming and the temperature of the earth is going to go up higher. Humans will adapt.
We will prevail. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut it off there, sir. We'll be back and discuss robotics and more in a moment. I'm Art Bell.